now!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Well, no Brock today. We shall rock out with our Brock out. Brady Henderson in for Brock for the next couple of hours. We'll talk a whole bunch of Seahawks football with Brady, and also going to make sure we hit on the crazy Shohei Ohtani interpreter scandal. Tisha Thompson, who broke the story with ESPN, is going to be joining us an hour from now at 8 o'clock. Brady, good morning.
What's up, Mike?
What's going on? The last time you were in was basically the start of free agency, and we were wondering what the heck they were going to do. They didn't act immediately that day, and so I was very, very worried that they had taken 20 minutes, a half hour, without being active. As we sit here today, they've been very active. What do we make of their offseason?
Yeah, they've been active in every position other than guard. And I think I'm going to expose myself to old takes exposed. I think I said when I was in with you last time that the fact that it's a good guard draft or good, you know, offensive line draft in general could mean some good values at guard in free agency. And I think we've seen the opposite of that. We've actually seen guys get paid a ton of money.
Yeah.
And so that is the one position where, you know, the Seahawks still have, I think, quite a bit of work to do, but yeah, I think they've done a nice job at plugging holes and finding, good, valuable veterans. And you know, I don't know if you could say that all of these positions they've upgraded necessarily and found better players. They might think that they found better players, but on paper, it's hard to say that. What we can say is it looks like they've found better values at a lot of those spots.
I think that's very well said, and I should give you some kudos. As you said in that day, I said it a bunch of times the next day, you nailed the value on Leonard Williams almost exactly within $500,000 a year of what he ended up getting. So big kudos to Brady. He had that essentially locked down of what he was going to get. That's their real big ticket item. They didn't do one deal more than 3 years. Right. There's not one single deal they made that is more than 3 years. What do you make of that? It feels a little, I mean, it's value. Is it good value or is it bargain bin shopping?
Well, I think it's also reflective of the ages of some of these guys. You know, you typically will do a 4 year deal with a guy coming off of his first contract, you know, and those are the big ticket free agent items. You know, it's easier to give a 4 year deal to a 25 year old guy who's just coming off his rookie deal. You know, Pharrell Brown is what, 29 years old. You do a 1 year deal with him. Rayshon Jenkins, that's a 2 year deal. You know, he's 30 years old, so he's not much younger than Quandre Diggs. That's a guy who's, you know, been in the NFL for 7-8 years already. So I think that the length of the deals is reflective of the fact that, you know, these are not your typical, you know, big ticket free agent item. It's guys who are here on short-term deals, veteran guys, more so to plug holes than to be building blocks.
Is there one guy that jumps out to you, one signing that you really liked? Take Leonard Williams out of it because he was already here. Is there one new player that you saw and you're like, yeah, that really makes a lot of sense for the Seahawks?
Well, we'll get into this a little bit in Blue 88, but I like what they've done at linebacker and getting a little bit younger there, at least from one spot, and also just getting faster there. I think collectively they'll be faster at that spot, and I think there's more work to be done there just because they've got two guys on one-year deals, two veteran guys. But I like the fact that they should give themselves a better chance to better defend the middle of the field in the passing game.
How serious an issue has that been?
It's been an issue. Yeah, it's been an issue. And look, that's part of, you know, what you're going to sacrifice when you've got an older player there. I think for everything that Bobby Wagner did really well in the run game and being probably the best tackler on that defense, yeah, I think when you've got a guy over 30 there, you just, you know, you sacrifice some speed in the middle of the field, and we saw some teams take advantage of that. Look, Bobby Wagner is a Hall of Fame player. There's no doubt about it. But I do feel like for what they might give up in leadership and you know, defending the run, I think they may gain something in just having more speed in the middle of the field.
Do you have a sense yet as to whether they're going to be really competitive this year? It's the one thing I can't quite get a grip on. I could write you a story in which they are, right, where some of these short-term additions who are sort of middle-aged NFL players come together and have some success, and they still have the nucleus that they have with the young players that were already on this team. New coach, unlock some of the potential that they were missing, and they go out there and have a really good year. I could also pretty easily write you a script where it's too much new and a lot of free agency, and those guys don't necessarily coalesce, and they haven't fixed the offensive line. Your colleague, Mike Clay at ESPN, yesterday had them as the single worst offensive line unit in the NFL as of today, that just completely undoes them.
Yeah.
Undoes. Nice job, Mike. Undoes them at the front of their offense. So do you have a sense yet of whether or not they're going to be in contention? By the way, they play in a really good division.
They do. Now, that division, there is some attrition there, right? Aaron Donald, the best player in the division for the last 10 years, is retiring. And you're seeing some of that, too, with San Francisco, where they had to cut Eric Armstead. And you know, he was a big factor in the middle of their defensive mm-hmm. line. So, you know, there is some, like, they got kind of a couple breaks in free agency with those two people moving on. It you know, they still are, I think, well behind San Francisco in terms of talent. And look, you know, the Rams, I don't know if the Rams were that much more of a talented team than them last year, but they lost to the Rams twice. And so, yeah, going back to your original question about how competitive can they be this season, I mean, I think they still don't have the difference makers to truly compete with San Francisco. And I agree with Brock. I think Brock has made this point too, and I've kind of looked at it the same way, that it feels like they are really making a run at 2025 mm-hmm. and that they are cleaning up some of their cap. You know, I look at the decision to obviously they cut Jamal Adams. They could have designated him a post June 1 and basically spread out the $20 million cap hit. So taking 10 of it this year,
the dead money hit.
The dead money cap hit. Yeah. Taking 10 of it this year, 10 of it next year. They decided to take all $20 million in change of that this year. And so between that and just the fact that, you know, they're signing some of these veteran guys as more, finding more veteran value plays as opposed to true difference makers, that seems to me like they're setting up this year as you plug some holes, you rely mostly on younger players, and you really make a run for it in 2025.
Yeah, I'll give you the other side of this from Bert Breer, who was in his mailbag yesterday, said, hey, I don't understand some of the negativity I've heard around the Seahawks roster. I think the last two draft classes give McDonald's first staff in Seattle a good foundation to work from. Pieces like tackles Cross and Lucas, receiver Jackson Smith and Jigba, edge rushers Boye Mafe and Derek Hall. Maybe he hasn't watched Derek Hall yet. Corners Reek Woolen, Devin Witherspoon, Kobe Bryant, Kenneth Walker, all the group. Add to that older guys like DK Metcalf and Geno Smith, factor in the re-signings of Leonard Williams, Noah Fant, and then middle-class ads like Baker and Jenkins, there's no real reason why Seattle shouldn't contend in the fall. I mean, I love Bert, and I think he's got a really good sense of what's going on in the league. I'm not sure I see all of that and say that's a team designed to truly contend right now.
Yeah, because you still got to get past San Francisco. And what about...
And because your offensive line's a mess.
Right, but what about just the past two seasons would give you the sense that they're ready to be more competitive against the best team right. in their division, the Rams as well.
There's also that issue of just naming a player doesn't mean that he's necessarily going to turn into something. Like, you can name Derek Hall, but that doesn't mean Derek Hall's going to be a great pass rusher this year. You can name Reek Woolen, but that doesn't mean he's going to be the rookie Reek Woolen as opposed to the sophomore Reek Woolen, who kind of stunk. You can name Kobe Bryant, but he didn't play much last year. So, like, naming players is one thing. Like, hey, these are the guys that are there. Well, yeah.
And looking up the fact that Derek Hall was a second round pick.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He should. Yeah.
But they actually got to go out and perform. So we'll see. All right. Brady's going to be in here for the next couple hours. We got a whole bunch of stuff to do. We're going to talk a lot of Seahawks, of course, but also keep you updated on what is potentially the most explosive and fascinating story in sports. We'll give you the up to the latest details next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it's always been one of the best days on the sports calendar. The beginning of March Madness. And yeah, I still consider today to be the beginning. I know they had the first four, but look, when you get the field to 64, that's really when the madness begins like today. Two Washington schools both play this afternoon. Neither until then, though. Zags, 425 on TBS. Cougs have the last game of the night, 705 on True TV. If you can find it, you're lucky. Make sure you know how to find it ahead of the game. I think you can also find it on the Max app, so maybe you have that. These two teams have only played once before. It was in 1935. Big win for Wazoo that year, 28-27 over the Bulldogs. So, yeah, you got to be assuming they're looking for revenge almost 100 years later. As for Drake, they're a pretty good team. Kyle Smith knows they've got at least one guy they really like.
You know, they're just really well-coached team put together. You know, we've called Baby Bird, you know, Little Larry, Tucker DeVries, and kind of plays, even though he's not, doesn't bring the ball up the floor all the time, but it's almost like they're put together a little like the Dallas Mavericks with Luka. I mean, he averages 3.6 assists. He's a really good scorer. And then they have really good guys that fit with him as far as guys that can bang threes and guard their position, and they share the ball. So they're a pretty complete team.
Yeah, it should be a pretty interesting 7-10 matchup tonight.
Is this maybe the best 4-5 week stretch of the sports calendar every year, considering everything that's going on between NFL free agency? You got opening day coming up. You got March Madness. And then you've got the lead up to the NFL draft. Plus the Masters.
It's pretty close. I mean, I think April and May, then you start getting the draft and you get like the basketball and hockey playoffs get thrown into it. Baseball's in full swing. September, October, you get baseball and football, like football starting, baseball's wrapping up. I don't know. There's a lot of pretty good times.
I think the Masters puts this one over the top.
Of course you do. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Anyway, you can watch the Husky, or rather the Cougs, excuse me, tonight. You can listen to them here on Seattle Sports. Pre-game starts at 6:30, which means the Mariners game will air on 770 KTTH. I mentioned the Huskies. They're not in the tournament, and they're not only looking for a new head coach for their basketball team. Going to be looking for a new AD also. Troy Dannon shocked the world, headed to Nebraska yesterday. Going to make quite a bit of money there, between 1.6 and 2.1 million a year during that 6-year deal, plus $1 million signing bonus, and they're paying out his buyout. But of course, as he told Jake Garcia, who caught up with him at the airport yesterday, it's not about money.
It was really a move back home, a family thing. You know, I've said it was very, very personal, and because I've loved everything about Washington. You know, my family's not here yet, and you know, the chance to, you know, go to what is a great place. But it's really home.
It's not about money. It's entirely about family. I've loved my time here. Of course, I didn't move my family out here. Let's not be crazy. Putting those two sentences back to back without even a period in between is truly a remarkable feat. But that's what Troy Dannon did. He loved it here. He just, you know, never moved his family. Makes sense.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, this could end up being one of the weirdest, biggest stories in ages. The Dodgers have fired Ipe Mazuhara. He's a translator for Shohei Ohtani, but that's where it gets complicated. Ipe had been placing all kinds of bets through a sketchy bookie in California where that's not legal at all. Ohtani's also wired him $4.5 million. Now, why did he wire him the money? We don't entirely know. Originally, they said that he was wiring him the money to cover his bets. They're best friends, practically brothers. Then Shohei changed the story and said, wait a minute, there's been a massive theft and he's stealing all of this money from him. $4.5 million. Now, there is one other scenario, of course, and that is that Shohei's actually been using him to place the bets himself. And that really it's Shohei's money that has been going to the bookie, and this guy's just the middleman. I don't know which of the three it is. Nobody does yet. They say they're turning this over to the authorities. Tisha Thompson of ESPN is on it. She's going to join us at 8 o'clock. Here's what she said is how it all started.
Well, we had documents and sourcing that indicated that Shohei Ohtani's name was on bank statements, bank documents, specifically wire transfers that were going and had been received by a bookmaking operation in Southern California that sources had told us was under federal investigation. So we reached out to Ohtani's spokespeople and were eventually told that it was his interpreter, his best friend, some people have described him, Ipe Mazuhara, who had been taking on the gambling debts, that he had been placing the bets himself.
The story is so sketchy.
Yeah, and this feels like a story where we are just seeing and hearing the tip of the iceberg, and that there could be so much more to this, and maybe even the story that we're getting is really just a watered-down version of what actually happened. And look, it's our job as media people to be cynical, and I think it's not very hard to be cynical about what we are hearing out of this.
Well, especially when you've seen, you know, Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan and some of the things that have gone on in the past or in the background that nobody really was aware of publicly when they were happening until it all came out in one sort of, you know, cascading moment. Yeah, I think it's very, very normal to be not just skeptical, but cynical in this case. Mariners will get back to it today after being off yesterday, a rare 6:40 evening game as they will take on the Reds.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, really a big news day for the Seahawks yesterday, but they did make a bunch of their deals official. Jonathan Hankins becomes official. Rayshon Jenkins, he signed his contract as well. Now, those had both been sort of widely reported for a while. Kind of fascinated by Hankins, man. He's a big boy.
He is, yeah. 12th year veteran, 320 pounds, and I think the size is really what intrigued them. Now, he essentially replaces Mario Edwards in the rotation as sort of like that fourth guy, right? Behind Leonard Williams, Jaron Reed, Draymond Jones. But all of those guys have different body types, right? They're all around 300 pounds. If you look at what Mike Macdonald had in Baltimore, it was two defensive tackles who were well over 330 pounds. So he had a lot of beef in the middle of that defensive line. The Seahawks didn't really have that with all those guys like right around 300 pounds. Jonathan Hankins, 320. He gives them that big body that they really didn't have before.
Is he going to be a little more than 320 by the time he gets here?
We'll see.
I mean, is 320 a real number or is that like his stated number?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's like a high school situation where the, right, you know, the numbers are like off by about 50 pounds, but we do see that sometimes in the NFL, so we'll see.
All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. That's Brady Henderson in for Brock today. I misspoke earlier. Let me apologize. Thank you to the text correctors. I appreciate you. I said Brandon Williamson was part of the Castillo deal. I was wrong. I'm sorry about that. That was Levi Stout and Andrew Moore. Stout, of course, is now back with the Mariners, so it doesn't make the deal really a whole lot better for the
Brandon
Reds.
Brandon Williamson was for Winker, right?
Brandon Williamson was part of the Winker trade. Yeah. So my apologies. Got it wrong. Kind of mixed those two up in my mind. But regardless, Williamson's hurt, Stout's here, and Arroyo's hurt, and Marte is suspended for 80 games. So still not looking great for the Reds, even if I got it wrong. Sorry about that. My bad. Didn't mean to give you some false information this morning. Brady, you're a great reporter. You would never do anything like that, obviously.
Well, it sounds like an innocent slip of the tongue. Well, yeah, I've done that before.
Maybe it was malicious. Maybe I was trying to fool people into believing that Brandon Williamson was a part of that trade. You'll never know. You'll never know what my real goals were here today. All right, coming up. Two things. One, I do want to ask you about Shohei because the story is just crazier by the minute. Two, I have received through mostly Justin Mora and my email, I have received word on all of these new Mariner dishes that are going to be served at T-Mobile. And some years this doesn't impress me. Some years it's sort of eyewash. Some years they throw out like, you know, the disgusting maggots that they serve in the pen or whatever those things
crickets.
Are. Oh, sorry, crickets. They're crickets? I thought they were maggots. Crickets. Either way, I'm not eating them. That's disgusting. Maggots. Totally revolting and gross. This year, though, not like that at all. And it's all headlined by the double Mitch Witch. I'll tell you what that is and a whole lot more next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710, salesports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, 8 o'clock, 30 minutes from now, we are going to talk to Tisha Thompson of ESPN. She's on the Shohei Ohtani situation with his interpreter and this gambling debt. It is a fascinating story with the potential to get a whole lot more interesting as well. So that's coming up in 30 minutes. Brady Henderson is here. I want to talk to you guys about not just the double Mitch Witch, but honestly, Mariners kind of outdone themselves here. I don't always get all in on the whole what's new at the ballpark food situation, but this is pretty good. And I want to address some of these, and I'd like to know what you guys... I want to address this. This is a serious situation, Justin. Yes. Very serious.
Yes. You're very excited about the Tamari Bar.
All right. So let's start with the Tamari Bar. So this is a new restaurant. Where is that? Do you know?
133.
133.
Section 133.
Okay, so that is main concourse, but I don't know whether that's right or left field. In so any event.
Yeah, I always think like 40, 41, 42 is third base. I always think 20, 21, 22 is first base.
Okay, so you're talking kind of behind the plate.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tamari Bar.
Could be in the previous Dim Tai Fung spot, but don't quote me on that. I just think that's in the ish
kind of
area.
In that area. Yeah. Okay, so Japanese food, and they're going to also offer a curry rice with Japanese pickles and dried seaweed. Justin, how do we feel about Japanese pickles and dried seaweed?
I'm on board with all of
now, what is a Japanese pickle?
I actually don't know if I know the answer to that.
The pickle master has been stumped?
Off the top of my head, like, I mean, I know that usually there's a lot more ginger in Japanese pickled stuff, but yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, it's all vegetables.
I think they use rice vinegar instead of regular.
Well, that sounds pretty good. I'm in on that. All right, so there you go. You got the tamari bar. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you guys, Brady, of the two Mitches in the double Mitch Witch, which one sounds better to you? Now, this is a walk-off market item. So you've been to the walk-off market, right? They like Amazon walk-off markets there.
Oh, yeah.
You put your credit card in when you walk in, and then you just walk out with whatever you want, and they charge you for it. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's the greatest thing in the world, although it can get you in a little bit of trouble because it is so easy to get beverages there that you can consume them faster than you might think. And that happened to me at the Def Leppard show a couple years ago. Anyway. Love the walk-up market. The double Mitch Witch is one sandwich cut in half. On one half, the Mitch Garver half, is a version of a Cuban, essentially.
Oh.
With pulled pork and ham, mustard, the whole thing. So it's a Cuban, essentially, on one side. The Mitch Hannigan, now they're sort of built off of where these guys are from. The, and I think he's from Florida, is that right? Is that why it's a Cuban? And then Mitch Haniger, of course, is from the Bay Area. Yeah. And so the Mitch Haniger half of the double Mitch Witch is baked chicken or grilled chicken, marinated tomato, bacon, and fried avocado and Havarti.
Ooh.
Right.
Yeah.
Does the fried avocado jump out to anybody else? Because I heard fried avocado and went, oh, you're going to put that right on a sandwich. Interesting.
Yeah, I've never heard of avocado being cooked in any manner.
Me neither.
Before.
But tell me you're not intrigued by that.
I'm very intrigued.
You put a word like fried in front of avocado and all of a sudden sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's got all the making. I do like a good chicken sandwich. I also like a good Cuban.
Yeah, so you go in, which side are you eating first, I guess would be my question. Are you eating the Garver side first and saving the Haniger side for later for your last bite? Or are you going Haniger side first and saving the spiciness of the Cuban? Or are you trying to go back and forth like some sort of savage?
I'll probably save the one that I feel like is going to make a better, quote unquote, fourth meal, you know, after I got a couple soda pops in me. What's going to taste better like at the end of the night?
That's the one I'm going to save. Kind of thing you just have to eat right away?
The
like
which?
The avocado. Is that something you just have to eat? I'm not an avocado fan at all.
Yeah, I guess over
so
time.
You kind of got to get it like because it turns to mush.
Well, first of all, it's been fried. Second of all, it doesn't turn brown for hours. You got time.
Okay.
Do we know, not to sound like a cheapskate, do we know the price?
Don't have a price on this. I'm sure it's cheap. It's at the ballpark. Generally, food at ballparks is very inexpensive. I don't have the number in front of me.
I know that the value menu has been expanded, though. So you know
well, that's good to know.
And they will have the jumbo pickle in a pouch available at the walk-off market.
Well, that's great.
Very
exciting.
Yes.
I've been debating on this because I want the last bite of whatever I eat to be the best one. I'll always save the best for last, which is a problem because I tend to clean my plate, which isn't necessarily a good thing. But I think that just based on the spiciness of the Cuban, the mustard, et cetera, sort of the saltiness of it all versus sort of the creamy finish with the avocado, I'm saving the Haniger sandwich for last. I'm going Cuban first, saving the Haniger sandwich for last.
I didn't realize we were going to get this kind of hard-hitting analysis.
Maura, what do you think? I just kind of run through this and list it? Like, if you're going to mention what's there, you want to analyze it and give people an opinion on it. This is sports radio. This isn't like, we don't just read the news here.
Can I jump in and ask how you feel about the King Pizza?
Well,
from Ballard Pizza?
The King Pizza?
Yeah. It's got mini rigatoni pasta on it.
Hold on a second. I haven't read about this one yet. Yeah. Hold on. The King Pizza.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. This is going to be.
Last year there was the calzone.
Right. You know? I remember that. Oh, and so this is.
Well, they like to do plays on some current and former Mariners. So I'm assuming that's what the King part of this is.
So what is on the King Pizza?
Mini rigatoni pasta.
Huh.
Marjoram, chili flakes, tomato, mozzarella, pecorino, and parmesan.
I mean, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sign me up.
Marjoram, huh?
Marjoram.
Not to be confused with margarine.
Marjoram.
Right. Margarine is like fake butter made of oil that my mom still uses for
marjoram
some unknown
is a
reason.
Spice,
but
right?
Marjoram is a spice.
And then Ethan Stoll, because Ballard Pizza's Ethan Stoll.
Yes.
His other restaurant is How to Cook a Wolf.
Yes.
Well, one of his other restaurants.
Yes.
They now have a How to Wolf a Cookie.
How to Wolf a Cookie.
Yeah, it's just a big cookie, I think.
That sounds pretty good. All right, so that sounds good. You want to stick with desserts? I've got a dessert for you. Ready? Salt and Straw. You a Salt and Straw fan?
I've been, yeah. I like it.
Pretty good.
That's in Ballard, right?
It is, and also in Capitol Hill. But you're not cool enough to know about that, Brady. You're not out on the club scene like I am. Salt and Straw has added two ice creams this year. One, wild berries forged from the slopes of Mount Baker in Washington. So these aren't just any wild berries. They're forged specifically from Mount Baker. Foraged.
Maury,
you wrote foraged.
No, that's what it says in the I got it straight from the press release, but I think it should be foraged.
Forged like, means like a sword, like on like a blacksmith.
It also says a double. It also says
faked on the slopes of Mount Baker.
The next part says simmered into an ooey gooey filling and slathered across crispy bits of double based pie crust. I think that's probably double baked
forged.
As well.
Maybe forged, like
foraged. Okay.
Melded together.
Forged is, that's what Russ is going to be doing in Pittsburgh.
That sounds pretty good. All in a salted vanilla
pie
ice cream.
Crust and berries and forged.
Yeah, that sounds pretty tremendous. I'm getting that. And then a vegan strawberry coconut water sherbet? No. By the way, did you know there's no R in sherbet? Second R, anyway?
Yeah.
Bizarre. The word is sherbet, and yet it's spelled S-H-E-R-B-E-T. It's nonsensical.
Is that like how some people say Washington?
Like, maybe. I don't know. My wife says sherbet, like that. Like you're supposed to. It's bizarre. Uh-huh.
Well, it should be pretty familiar to you growing up in Boston.
Adding an R?
Well, not
or taking
saying
the R off.
Yeah, because they add R's to things that don't
like
have
soda. Like
complicated relationship
soda.
With R's. Yeah.
Very complicated.
But there are value beers this year starting at $4.50 as well.
Well, that's good to know.
Yep. $4.50.
What size are those?
But you know what? I don't have that in front of me. But last year,
it's like the little
4 ounces.
Last year, there were 12 ounce cans. Yeah.
Okay.
So 455, 50.
One other I want to tell you: Marination has added tofu tots and regular tots with a special seasoning blend.
But get to the big
there's
stuff.
Gonna be frosé slushies and non-alcoholic pineapple coconut slushy options. That sounds pretty good, Brady. You were just telling me you made a pineapple coconut slushy the other day.
Also known as a pina colada.
Still, it's a pineapple coconut slushy. Just add a little rum to it. And then finally, I did want to make sure I got to this one. Moto Pizza.
The creme de la creme.
Yes, is adding their crab pizza. I've had that. Maura, did you have that at the Winter Classic?
I did.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it?
Mike Lefko, of course, was on a mission to get it because he has to try all the food. And Shannon Dreyer also wanted to try it, but I think it came with two pieces. It was a lot,
yeah.
And she didn't want it all, so I benefited
from
that.
Well, that's nice.
And it was delicious.
So just to let you know, the Moto Pizza is adding the crab pizza. That is fresh Dungeness crab, forged from just right out here. That's where they forge it. Splash of warm butter, dill, thyme, not T-I-M-E, T-H-Y-M-E, the spice, and Parmesan, but then finish, Brady, with liquid sunshine. Do you know what that is? Of course you don't.
No,
you don't know anything about cooking. Liquid sunshine, you live on a boat, is a mix of fresh squeezed lemon and herbs on a century-old sourdough starter. Yeah, that's liquid sunshine.
That sounds good.
I bet it is, yeah.
You ever gone crabbing, Mike?
Have I ever gone crabbing?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, you are from the Northeast, but that answer tells me no.
You can't even get him to go on a boat for recreation.
You should come crabbing with me sometime.
I don't like going on boats. I get sick. Can I vomit?
Sure.
Will there be a vomit bag?
It's called the ocean.
I think that's the Puget Sound is generally your vomit bag.
I can't even get onto your boat just to like stand there for a few minutes without starting to get sick, man. You know me. I can barely handle it. Anyway, that does sound pretty good. I've gone clamming.
Okay.
I've done that. I've gone digging for clams. Then we tried to eat them. We're like, nope, let's not do this. Let's instead go out and get clams that somebody else has already cooked and like made better than this. So, yeah, there you go. All right, that's some of what's going to be available this year. Starting a week from today, opening day is coming, guys. It's right around the corner. We want to send one of you and three friends to the game. All you need to do is open the Seattle Sports app and click the Win tab to find out how. Now, if you don't already have the app, shame on you. All you got to do, though, is text app, APP, to 866-979-3776. That's our number. And we will just send you a link to download it right now. Justin will handle that for you. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun. At opening day, this contest runs through Sunday, March 24th. Text app, APP, to 866-979-3776. All right. Blue 88 coming up here in about 5 minutes. Right after that, we're going to talk to Tisha Thompson, who is the ESPN reporter, investigative reporter on the Shohei Ohtani interpreter story. Brady, we kind of ran through this earlier. This is one of those things that I think captures people's attention. I got like 5 texts from various friends who don't always text me about sports yesterday who were like, what the you know what is going on with Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter? The story keeps changing and evolving, and my guess is when everybody gets back from Seoul, South Korea, it's going to continue to evolve even more rapidly, especially as more and more investigative journalists from around the country decide they want to sink their teeth into this, and it gets turned over to the authorities. Like, there's a lot more that's going to come out.
Yes. And this guy was just in the dugout yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? So this story is in the very early stages of being unraveled.
Yes.
And even then, the story has already changed, right? So the account of what exactly happened, and now we're hearing that there was some sort of, there was an alleged theft involved, and there's just so many possibilities. What we know now, or at least what we can say right now, is this looks like a nightmare scenario for MLB, because it's one thing in the NFL, and we saw the NFL, suspend a handful of players over gambling infractions, right? And I would say save Calvin Ridley. Aside from Calvin Ridley, most of these guys were players that nobody had really ever heard of. And right. So it wasn't a huge deal that, the NFL wasn't going to miss these players while they were suspended. And I think it benefited the NFL to have some of these lesser known guys to make examples of. MLB does not want to make example out of Shohei Ohtani. They want to make example out of somebody else to right. deter everybody else from doing this. But
You say it's a nightmare scenario, and maybe it is. And if this does end up leading back to Shohei, as a lot of people are speculating or wondering about today, it obviously sure sounds like a nightmare for baseball, if for no other reason than because they may lose their greatest star.
Yeah.
But leagues survive this stuff pretty quickly. The public seems pretty willing to pretend like nothing's happening. And I will forever talk about the Tim Donaghy case in the NBA as being the best example of it. The NBA had a ref who admitted to fixing games, and people are like, whatever.
It's amazing that that story didn't get more play than it did.
It should have been the biggest story of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
An NBA ref fixed games and said so. People are like, whatever. It was probably fine. And they just keep watching because at the end of the day, it's entertainment. And I think for a lot of folks, they don't care whether it's WWE style or whether it's entirely real, or in this case, if maybe there's, a little somewhere in between where it's mostly real, but occasionally a ref or a player or somebody gets involved. And yeah, it's awful and they want that person punished, but it's certainly not going to keep them from watching. Nobody stopped watching after Tim Donaghy. They're just like, all right. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. That was a clear example of fixing games, and there's no evidence, at least yet, that Ohtani bet on baseball. And we don't know what is going to come out. The interpreter was very adamant that there was no betting on baseball, and he said that that's the one of the first things they hear. They get the presentation.
He said that. Oh, so then he must not have bet on baseball.
Well, I know, but I would
be clear. The interpreter said he didn't bet on baseball.
I know.
It was just international soccer and some other things.
But even as skeptical as I am of this story and what we're hearing, I almost would give them the benefit of the doubt that they would not be stupid enough to bet on baseball.
Well, I mean, they'll start going through the dates and the time. Yeah. So, the way this all kind of came about is, they found the bookie got in trouble. And so once they started looking at the bookie, they found the wire transfers, and that's now how they know that $4.5 million went from Shohei Ohtani on to, this.
With Ohtani's name on it.
At least.
Right. At least $4.5 million. Yeah. It could be end up being more than that. It's going to get messy, I think. We don't know whether Shohei's the victim or the perpetrator yet, but it's probably not that he's the nice guy in this story. He's either the victim or the perpetrator. And either way, it is going to be an explosive situation for Major League Baseball. Right now, we'll get to that at 8 o'clock, as I said, with Tisha Thompson, who's on this story for ESPN. Right now, let's ask Brady three good football questions. We call Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
All right, Brady, three football questions. We call Blue 88, and we'll start here. The NFL is going through their rules proposals right now, and there are two that are generating at least a little bit of press. Let me play a little bit of sound on each and then get your opinion. The first is banning the so-called hip drop tackle. Booger McFarland says,
they're trying to make the game safer, just like they did with the kickoff, just like they did with unnecessary roughness with receivers coming across the middle. Anytime that if a defender or a player does X, there is a high probability that the player he does it to is going to get hurt. The NFL is going to try to change the rule.
Now, in the meantime, the players don't seem to like the idea of changing it very much. Before we get to the second one, what do we make of banning the hip drop tackle?
Yeah, we heard the NFLPA actually come out and oppose that. And I think what they're saying is, the NFLPA wants to they share the common concern of player safety. I think they're worried about the interpretation of the rule and how confusing it might be to players, and they don't want a situation where guys are getting fined left and right for violating a rule that they don't really understand. But I think they can all agree that the hip drop tackle is a dangerous play, even if it's not intentionally so.
Can you describe it?
Yeah, so it can be hard to describe, but I think it's basically where a player lifts his feet off the ground and drops his hips to where his entire body weight is dragging down the guy that he's tackling, and the feet go up in the air. I think if you want a good example of this, go to the play in the Seahawks Monday night game against the Giants where Geno Smith threw the ball. It ends up getting batted. He catches it, and he runs towards the sideline, and Isaiah Simmons comes in and drags him down sort of from the side, sort of from behind. That was a play where Geno Smith actually hurt his knee and had to leave that game. So that was a good example of the defender, you know, kind of sinking his body weight, getting his feet off the ground, sinking his body weight with the feet off the ground and up in the air. And what happens a lot of times is the defender's body weight will, like one of the offensive player's legs will get trapped underneath the player's body weight, and there's the potential for, you know, lower leg injuries like that. And so, but you have heard the NFLPA come out and oppose that rule because I think it's that their point is, what exactly constitutes this, and our players, our defenders, going to be getting fined left and right?
Not cut and dry, like grabbing the face mask or something along those lines. Yeah. The other one is proposing a kickoff rule change to make it look like what some of the other leagues have gone to. Here's Dan Graziano explaining.
So they wanted to try and design something where there would be returns. So they consulted with players around the league and special teams coaches around the league, and this is what they came up with, this new alignment where the kicking team, the kicker will kick from the 35, the kicking team will line up on the opposing team's 40. Nobody but the kicker and the returner can move until the ball either hits the ground or is caught by one of the returners. And the idea is to get more returns back into the game, but also do it in a way that reduces those high-speed collisions that have made the kickoff such a dangerous play when it comes to concussion rate.
All right, so I don't know whether it's going to matter because it seems like most kickoffs are touchbacks anyway, yeah. But what do we make of this new kickoff idea?
Well, yeah, it's just continuing to try to lower the speed at which the two kickoff units collide with each other. Remember, it wasn't all that long ago where, remember, that the kickoff was... you would have everybody but the kicker. Remember, they would try to get that 10-yard head start, and they would all time it up, and sometimes you'd see offsides penalties because one guy would, you know, be a foot ahead of the kicker when he actually kicks the ball. Now, they all start from the same spot, so there's no running start. And now the NFL is really going further to try to reduce the speed at which the two units collide. So they're having the kickoff unit, most of those guys line up, you know, well downfield. And so you're basically just trying to reduce the speed. Now, what's interesting is that they don't seem to be trying to just eliminate the kickoff. They don't seem to be trying to have all of these results
excitement,
touchbacks. Yeah. Now, look, I think the kickoff is just, it's slowly dying right now. And it's become such a less exciting play that I think eventually we're just going to see it, you know, eliminated altogether. And you're going to see a team just start from a certain point of the field. And I think the NFL data will tell you that a lot of concussions, at least on a percentage basis, occur on kickoffs because you got two players, two sides running at a pretty high speed towards each other.
All right, question number two. That was a long one. Brady, what the heck are they doing in the interior of their offensive line?
They're looking for value. Yeah, and you heard John Schneider on with Wyman and Bob the other day talk about what's happened with offensive linemen and how some of those guys, just because there is not a whole lot of quality offensive linemen being produced out of college, those guys get overdrafted and they get overpaid. And we've never really seen them overpay. We've seen it a couple times, but generally they have looked for value at that position. And I think in this free agency period where they're doing that everywhere else, you know, getting veteran value plays, they've just made a decision that they're not going to overpay for offensive linemen. And so, again, I will fully expose myself to Old Takes Exposed and say that when I said that the Seahawks, you know, the fact that this is a good offensive line draft could lead to some good values in free agency, it's sort of been the other way, where you see Damian Lewis get $8+ million a year. You saw, this wasn't a free agent signing, but Landon Dickerson, a re-signing by Philadelphia, got $20+ million a year. So the fact that that guard market is going as high as it is, I think they're saying, yeah, they're going to stay out of that. Now, I do know that they are going to sign a guard at some point. They're going to sign a veteran guy to, you know, maybe it's just a draft hedge as opposed to a guy who's going to be guaranteed for a starting job. But knowing how young that group is right now, right, with Anthony Bradford, with Tremaine Antrim, who's only been in the NFL for 4 years and not a whole lot aside from that. They're going to have at least one veteran guard in here, and they're certainly going to address that position in the draft.
All right, question number three. Who will be their most impactful free agent signing?
Yeah, now you're asking about additions as opposed to re-signings.
Yeah, I think you got to go with additions.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about just players in general, it's Leonard Williams. But if you're talking about additions, I would probably go with the two inside linebackers that they signed. Now, again, this has not been a free agency period where they've gone out and spent a lot of money on a single guy where you feel like, yeah, this guy has the potential to be a Pro Bowl difference maker type guy. It's been more so veteran, holes being plugged with short-term inexpensive deals. And look, I think Tyrell Dotson is a young guy, 25 years old, but that's a one-year deal for right around $4 million. Jerome Baker, we don't have the full details of his contract, but that's a one-year deal worth, I think, up to $7 million. And I think with those two guys, you get some speed in the middle of that defense, which has been lacking. Now, Jerome Baker, look, clearly the Dolphins thought that Jordan Brooks was a better player. They signed Jordan Brooks after cutting Jerome Baker. Mm-hmm. But one thing that Baker has over Brooks is he's been more of a playmaker over his career. 20-plus sacks in six NFL seasons, 5 interceptions, I believe. So I think there is some playmaking upside with him over Jordan Brooks.
All right, that is today's Blue 88. Brady Henderson in for Brock today. It does kind of feel a little bit like that offseason where they brought in, like, Cedric Abuehi, and, like, there were, like, 8 different offensive linemen they brought in, and they did that instead of spending big money on, like, Jack Conklin or one of the guys that was available. So see what direction this goes next for the Seahawks. We got a lot more football to talk at 8:30. Brady and I will dig deeply into this offseason and where the whole thing is going. But coming up next, the biggest story in sports today is whatever is happening with Shohei Ohtani, his interpreter, and a bookie in Southern California. We're going to talk to the woman who broke this story, Tisha Thompson from ESPN, next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.